Okay, good evening, everybody. Welcome. Amazing chevra tonight. Thank you all so much. Some first-timers and some last-timers, but we'll go into that in a second. First, I want to thank our sponsors for this evening. Michael, you're here. Dr. Michael and Marilyn Fedak, in gratitude for the many weekly learning opportunities at BRS. Michael, thank you, and Marilyn, so much for your constant generosity to BRS, and particularly this shiur. Our shiur tonight's also sponsored for a refuah shlema for a good friend, Yehudis Kayla Bas Chana Malka. If everyone could keep her in your tefilos, that would be appreciated as well. And our learning should be for a refuah shlema for her. And as always, our learning is an aliyah from the neshama of Esther Tila Bas Gabriel Pinchas. Before I begin, I would be remiss if I did not wish Seischem L'Shalom to two members of our Thursday night chabura. One, this is Moshe Moskowitz's last chabura. Before next week at this time, he'll be in Eretz Yisrael, Amir Tzashem, assuming Trump and Iran cooperate. And it is, I believe, the last Thursday night chabura of my dear friend, Dr. Danny Agian, who's also making Aliyah in the next week or two. So I believe this is last Thursday night here as well. And so to Moshe, to Danny, one's going a little bit more permanently. I don't know, maybe the other one will be more permanent also. Don't tell his mom. But we hope to join you in Eretz Yisrael and to continue this year with the coming of Mashiach very, very soon. Okay, idea number one comes from, obviously, Parshas Re'eh. Parshas Re'eh, we know, has a phrase that's going to appear over and over again, and that is the place, El HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem Elokeichem, the place that Hashem will choose. And of course, we know what the place is talking about. It's the worst kept secret in the entire Torah, and that, of course, is going to be Yerushalayim. Now, we also know that the word Yerushalayim does not appear in the Torah. It appears in Nach, Neviim and Ksuvim a lot. It does not appear in the Torah itself. In the Torah itself, Yerushalayim is only referred to as the place. Never Yerushalayim itself. We've spoken about this in the past. And in the past, when we've spoken about this idea of, it's very strange that the epicenter, the magnetic pull of Judaism, isn't mentioned anywhere in the Torah. It's, the mystery of the Torah. So we've always spoken about in the past in the context of the destination versus the process, that the Torah de-emphasizes the destination to show us it's the journey that gets us there. Tonight I want to share a different idea, which I think is transformative and unbelievable. It comes from a footnote in Rav Shlomo Aviner's Sefer called Orot HaTchiya. And there Rav Aviner develops and describes a machlokes, a dispute that exists between Rav Kook, the way he presents it, and the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Rav Kook and the Lubavitcher Rebbe. Rav Kook, he describes, and we're not going to start as so much Rav Kook because it's the lead-in to what we really want to talk about, but Rav Kook develops the idea, and it appears in Chassidus all over again, which is that where your thoughts are where you are. So I can be in Boca Raton, but if my thoughts are in Eretz Yisrael, so then I'm in Eretz Yisrael. He writes here, this is from, again, he gives 20 sources here. This is from the Tzavas HaRivash, Kemosha Adam Echashev, who, wherever a person thinks, that's where they are. He quotes from the Degel Machne Ephraim. Yadua b'makom shemachshavaso shel adam shamu kulo. Wherever your thoughts are, that's where you are. He quotes from the Maggid of Mezrich. He quotes from Rav Tzadok of Lublin, all developing the same idea, which again essentially says that wherever my thoughts are, they're able to transport me to that place. So it means when I go to my Shmon Esrei, I'm going to you guys just daven Marv. I didn't have a chance to daven Marv yet. I'm going to daven a little later. When I daven Marv tonight and I take my three steps and I'm facing east, when I think that I'm standing in the presence of Yerushalayim, when I'm facing Yerushalayim, in a almost cosmic way, I'm able to transport myself and put myself in Yerushalayim. It means I could be anywhere in the world and I take myself from where I am and I'm able to, again, transport myself to a different place because of my thoughts. And so if my thoughts are in Eretz Yisrael, I'm able to transport myself to Eretz Yisrael. If my thoughts are that I'm davening at the Kotel, then I'm able to transport myself to the Kotel. That is all what he defines as Rav Kook. It's what he defines as the Hasidish approach. Then he writes that the Lubavitcher Rebbe develops a different idea. And it's the inverse of the first idea. If the first idea is that wherever my thoughts are, I'm able to transport myself to that place, the Lubavitcher Rebbe develops the idea that I'm able, wherever I am, to bring Eretz Yisrael to me. So instead of it's me bringing myself to the land of Israel based on my thoughts, I'm able actually to bring the land of Israel to me wherever I am. How does he know that? So he knows that because of our parsha. Our parsha refers to Yerushalayim as Hamakom, the place. Why not give me a geographic location? Tell me where to find Yerushalayim on Waze. Tell me where to find Yerushalayim on Google Maps, and I'll go there. Why is it this ambiguous place called the place? So he writes here on page number 2, quoting again from Lubavitcher Rebbe. Umitaritz, I have my underline. Ki b'chol makom mukdar umugash l'shmi. That wherever you are, you can bring me, Hashem says, to that place. Lav dafka Yerushalayim. Doesn't have to be in Yerushalayim. Ela kol makom bo mispalel Yehudi l'vnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Wherever a Jew davins, hu hamakom asher bachar Hashem. That is the place that's meant for you, and that is the place that you can have a relationship and a rendezvous with Hashem. So as opposed to the first opinion, which says that I have to think of myself in Yerushalayim to transport myself from Boca Raton to Yerushalayim, Lubavitcher Rebbe says, no. Wherever I am, I can bring the holiness, I can bring the Kedusha, I can bring the connection, the relationship with Hashem from Yerushalayim to me. That's why he says, it refers to it as Hamakom. Why not tell me the exact place? The answer is because while Yerushalayim, of course, is a geographic location, and of course it's holier than any other place in the world, Hashem didn't want to limit our capability to connect and to have a relationship and to daven with Him only to Yerushalayim. A Jew should never think, if I'm in Boca Raton, I can't have a relationship with Hashem, but if I fly to Israel and I daven at the Kotel, then I can have a relationship with Hashem. Hamakom means that wherever you are, and in whatever circumstances you find yourself in, wherever Hashem puts you, that is where you're meant to be, and that becomes your, quote-unquote, makom kadosh. That becomes your holy, sanctified place. He writes here, aval, kishegam biyoso b'chutz laretz. That means that even in the diaspora, hu choshev al ha-mashiach v'al Eretz Yisrael, and I think about Mashiach, and I think about Eretz Yisrael, very b'shasa tfilu ponil etzad Eretz Yisrael, and when I daven, I face Eretz Yisrael. Azai, kol makom bo hu nimsa, hu ha-makom asher bachar ba Hashem. That what I'm doing is I'm not taking myself and transporting myself to Eretz Yisrael. It's the opposite. I'm taking Eretz Yisrael and I'm bringing it to me. Which means that you could be davening a mincha at the Marlins game. You could be davening mincha at a Dolphins game. You can be in a boardroom and have a ethical conundrum of how to interact and how to conduct a business deal. You could be at the gym. You could be at the supermarket. You could be anywhere. And if you use that as an opportunity to connect and to create Kedusha, that becomes your makom. That is HaMakom Asher Bachar Hashem. That is the place that Hashem has chosen for you. He quotes there on the bottom. Again, I'm just going to the next underline. He says, Yadua Hare Chuvaso Shel HaTzemach Tzedek LiYehudi BiYechidus. The Tzemach Tzedek, the third? I want to say the third Lubavitcher Rebbe. Yeah? Third Lubavitcher Rebbe. So the Tzemach Tzedek once said to someone, Ritzoncha Linsol Eretz Yisrael. You want to go to Eretz Yisrael? I say Kan Eretz Yisrael. You have the ability to make wherever you are like Eretz Yisrael. You have the way to make wherever you're standing the Kedusha, the holiness, and the sanctity of Eretz Yisrael. Now that of course doesn't mean that Eretz Yisrael isn't more holy than any other place. Doesn't mean we should aspire and we yearn for the Mashiach to be able to go to Eretz Yisrael. But it means that when we're in the diaspora, when we're in Boca Raton or Teaneck or the Five Towns or Kansas or Wichita, it doesn't matter. Wherever we are, we shouldn't think that there's a diminished capability of having a relationship with Hashem. Hamakom, the fact that the Torah leaves the destination in ambiguous, undefined terms is on purpose to show us that you can really have that connection and that relationship with Hashem wherever you are. So either side of the equation is a beautiful idea. Either the first side of the equation, which tells me that if I think and focus on Eretz Yisrael, I can transport myself there. It's a beautiful idea. The flip side is equally beautiful. And that's what the Lubavitcher Rebbe says. It means that when I'm here, I can take the Kedusha and the ability to connect with Hashem from Eretz Yisrael and bring it back with me here to Boca Raton. That should be a very empowering idea for us. Other religions limit that connection to Hashem, to specific times, to God, to specific times and places. You have to be in the sanctuary. You have to be in a certain place to be able to connect to God. Judaism is the exact opposite. Judaism is democratic in nature. In other words, it's not limited, but it's expansive. It could apply to any time, in any place, in any circumstances, wherever you find yourself. You have the ability to commune and to have a rendezvous and to have a connection with Hashem. That is what's unique about Judaism. That is the Lubavitch Rebbe on Hamakom, is the place. Again, leaving it in ambiguous, undefined terms to remind us that it could be anywhere, in any time, in any place. Oh, yeah. And I think that's a very, very powerful idea. Idea number two comes from a Mordechai Kamenetsky. First time appearance on Three Ideas in 30 Minutes. He writes here a very beautiful idea. It's a great question. Never would have noticed it without him. When the Torah is telling us about Maaser Sheni. So Maaser Sheni, of course, tells us that in certain years, you bring your produce to Yerushalayim. So let's say I'm a farmer, and I have 10,000 bushels of grain. That's the case he has here. So I have to bring 1,000 of those bushels to Yerushalayim. Now, I don't even know what a bushel is, but I would imagine that it's not so convenient to bring a bushel of my grains to Yerushalayim. Imagine you live in Be'er Sheva. Imagine you live in the Galil. It's a big trek, right? It's days and days. It's not so easy to bring 1,000 bushels. Again, I don't know. I assume a bushel is a lot. But it's hard to bring 1,000 bushels. So we had this idea that you were able to transfer the holiness from the bushels onto coins, bring the coins. Okay, Ethan, I knew you'd come up with it. How much is it?
I think it's 32 quarts.
32 quarts. I don't know what a quart is either, but I'm assuming it's a lot, okay? Right.
A quart of milk.
A quart of milk. Okay, 32 quarts of milk. That's a lot. 1,000 of those is a lot, okay? Anyways, so you're able to podate, you're able to transfer it into coins and to bring those coins to your shalim. In the context of that, listen to the way the Pasuk tells us.
37 quarts.
37 quarts. I carry that on my way to work every morning. The Pasuk says that when the road will be very long, kilo suchal say so, because you will not be able to carry it, because the place is long, and therefore Hashem says you could put it onto coins. He asks the obvious question in the underline. He says, yet, if you analyze the actual wording in the Torah, you will notice something strange. The Torah does not say, if you will not be able to carry it because the road will be long. Rather, the Torah says, if the road is long, because you will not be able to carry it. Understand, either the road is long or the road is not long. What does it mean that if the road is long because you cannot carry it? No, it's I can't carry it because the road is long. The syntax of the Pasuk is completely off. He writes, it seems that the Torah is saying that the road is long because you cannot carry it. Isn't the opposite true? If the road is long, it is not because you cannot schlep. You cannot schlep because the road is long. Why did the Torah reverse the phrase? Perhaps the Torah is telling us a subtle message. Okay, so everyone understand the question. It's a little bit, you gotta like use your brain for this a little bit, but I think we could all hack it, right? The Pasuk tells us that that if the road is long because you cannot carry it. That Pasuk makes no sense. A road is long, and because the road is long, therefore I cannot carry it. It's not that if the road is long because I cannot carry it. Okay, so what does it mean? So he describes here, I'm gonna go to his answer and then I'll give his story. But go to the next page to his answer. He writes homiletically, perhaps the Torah is telling us an important message in the psyche of mitzvah performance. The road will be too long because you will not be able to carry it. No one says the road is too long because of sheer distance. It is too long because you do not want to carry the load. If one, however, carries his package with joy, then the road is not a long one, right? If I'm driving, let's say I'm driving from here to Orlando. Is from here to Orlando a long trip or not a long trip? Well, it depends why you're driving to Orlando. If I'm driving to Orlando because I'm going to Disney for the very first time and I'm bringing my kids or grandkids for the very first time, those 3 hours are going to fly by because I'm very excited. I'm looking forward to it with eager anticipation. If I'm going to Orlando, on the other hand, because I'm being sued by my business partner, and deposition in Orlando, and I got lawyers and creditors all breathing down my neck. I don't know, those 3 hours, it's going to be a very long road. Every second there is going to feel like a very long time. It's not the distance, what he's saying. It's our perspective on what it is that we're carrying that shapes the distance. If you enjoy what you do, the distance isn't long. If you dread what you're doing, then the distance can be forever. This applies to work, by the way. People who love what they do, what do they always say? I never worked a day in my life. Of course they worked a day in their life. But the answer is because they enjoyed it, so the long road of their professional life was enjoyable. It was easy. It didn't feel long. On the other hand, if a person hates their job and they hate coming to work every morning, there's a drudgery to their life, then every single day schleps along and dregs along. And every day that you watch the clock hour by hour, your work professional life is going to feel like it's forever. Michael's going to understand my next example, and that is marathon running. I talk to people all the time. Rabbi, how do you run? It's the worst thing ever. I'm like going out of my mind. I don't know. I love running. You give me a Sunday morning by myself with a nice long run, I'm good. Yeah, that's like my, that's perfect scenario for me. What's the difference? For one person, they enjoy it. For the other person, they don't. The 4 miles, the 5 miles, the 6 miles, the 26 miles, they're all the same. Just one person enjoys what they're doing and the other person doesn't enjoy what they're doing. I'll give you another example. One we've used in the past as well, classical music. I don't know, do you like classical music or not? Right, is the symphony long or not? Depends. If you have an appreciation and an affinity for classical music, if you understand the beauty of what's taking place, then the 2 hours of the symphony are going to go by very fast. On the other hand, if you have no clue what's going on and you're bored sick, you're going to fall asleep very quickly and it's going to take forever. I feel that when I go to art museums, no disrespect to Mr. Mueller here. But I don't know, when I go to an art, I have zero appreciation for art. I was once with Daniel Katz. He's like showing me, he's so excited, and this guy and Picasso. I'm like, my 4-year-old could have done that. I have zero, even though I grew up in Boston, I'm supposed to be cultured. I have zero appreciation for art. You take me to an art museum, snooze fest, it's like the most boring thing on the planet. Someone who really appreciates it, understands art history, understands what the artist was trying to do, it's an amazing use of time. In other words, what I'm showing you is that it's not about the length. It's about my perspective on the journey. Now let's read his words again. No one says the road is too long because of sheer distance. In other words, the marathon's the same. It's the same half marathon for me and for the guy who hates it. The difference is, if one carries the package with joy, then the road's not a long one. I love running half marathons. For other people, they'd rather get a root canal, right? In other words, the distance is the same. It's how you approach it. If one decides that he's carrying a heavy burden, then the road, no matter how the distance, will always be too long. And that's what the Torah is telling us about our Judaism. It's telling us that when you come to shul, come to learning, if you don't enjoy it, if you feel like it's an annoyance and a burden, then minyan's going to feel like it's going on forever. The shir is going to feel like it's going on forever. A chavrus is going to feel like it's going on forever. The rabbi's speech is going to feel like it's going on forever. Everything's going to feel like it's ever. Why? Because it's like a burden. It's like the guy who runs the half marathon and hates it every step of the way. On the other hand, if you understand what you're engaged in the privilege that we have to be engaged in something that gives our life meaning and purpose and a sense of eternality that's going to far outlast all of our material existence, so then you don't mind it as much. Davening now has meaning. Davening has purpose. Davening is not going to schlep along, but it's something I look forward to, and it's something that I eagerly anticipate, the opportunity to daven. And I could apply that to every single mitzvah. Tzedakah. I'm going to read a lot about charity. Right, for some people, getting them to give tzedakah is like, again, having a root canal. Their hands get stuck in their pocket, never makes it way out. Right, they put it in, but they can't get it out. Other people are very generous. What's the difference? Difference is, both people could have a lot of money. I know a lot of people that give very generously. I know a lot of people that have very little and give generously. I know a lot of people that have a lot and give nothing. Right, what's the difference? Do you understand that what you're doing is meaningful? Does it give you joy? Does it give you purpose? And if it excites you, then you're eager to do it. And it feels effortless. It feels like you're the other person doing you the favor. On the other hand, it's of a burden, then the road is going to feel very long. And therefore, no matter how difficult a mitzvah seems, he finishes, if one observes it with a smile, with joy, and with pleasure, he will be able to carry the mitzvah for long distances. He will not carry it a long distance, him or herself. He will carry it for generations to come. Now let's read back to the pasuk. Again, it was a very strange pasuk. That if the road is too long, because you will not carry it. Now we understand. The road is too long because you didn't want to carry it, because it was a burden to you. The road, it was not the distance. it was your perspective of it because of the way you approached it. I think it's a very big idea about how we approach a life of Torah mitzvos. Rapinkus, in one of his svarim, used a very beautiful analogy. He says, if you see a guy walking down the street, and their shoulders are down, and they have a sad look on their face, and they're, right? You look at that person, you know they didn't just win the lottery, right? In other words, on the other hand, if you watch a person walk down the street and they're happy and skipping and hipping and bopping, they won the lottery, right? Now, the first guy could have had the lottery ticket in his pocket, but if he doesn't know it, he's gonna walk around with that sad look on his face because he doesn't know that he won the lottery. That's our approach to a life of Torah and mitzvos. If we walk around and it's a drudge and it's a long road and it's difficult, okay, we don't appreciate the privilege that we have to live a life of connection to Hashem, of meaning and in purpose. It's specifically when we come to it with the approach of privilege and opportunity that we find the joy in things that other people might find difficult, but we find meaning and purpose in. That is idea number two. I think a very, very beautiful idea. Idea number three comes from the Sefer Naus Deshe, Rav Avram Bornstein, writes a very beautiful idea. Pasuk tells us, the Jewish people, ki basem, hold on, I'm going to find it, ki lo basem ad ata, el ha-menucha, v'el ha-nachala. You haven't yet come to the menucha, which is the place of rest, and the nachala, which is your place of inheritance. The Gemara over there says, the Gemara in Zvachim, says, Menucha zo Shiloh, Nachala zo Yerushalayim. In other words, those two places of rest refer to two places, one where the Mishkan was going to dwell, tabernacle, and the other where the Beis HaMikdash is going to be. The Mishkan was in Shiloh. My daughter was just in Shiloh this week. Shiloh Winery. Great shout out to my dear friend who in Shiloh Winery just opened a visitor center if anyone wants to go there. What? Amichai Luri, who happens to have my favorite wine in the world. We should share this wine sometime together. What was it? Sponsored, what, by Shiloh Winery? Okay, tonight's cheer sponsored by Shiloh Winery. Anyways.
Rabbi, go to your mother's house tomorrow.
I'll go to my mom's house tomorrow. I wasn't invited. Okay, so Amichai Luri. So Amichai Luri, Shiloh. Okay, so Menucha represents Shiloh, where the Mishkan was. Nachala is Yushalayim. Shiloh, he writes, was the chelek of Yosef. That was when they divided up the land of Israel. Shiloh is in the portion of Yosef. And the Gemara tells us that what was unique about Shiloh as opposed to Yerushalayim? Well, Yerushalayim has walls around it. Shiloh had no walls. He writes, Hinin ki chomas Yerushalayim hi lahafsik ben kedusha l'chol. Yerushalayim had protective walls to protect the holiness of Yerushalayim from the outside world. Shiloh doesn't have that. So what does it mean? What's this connection of Menucha to Shiloh to Yosef? What does this all have to do with it? What does Yosef have to do with Shiloh and no protective walls? Like, what does one thing have to do with the other? How do we understand this very strange Gemara? So he describes very beautifully. Yosef, when he's in Mitzrayim, is in the middle of nowhere. He has none of the natural protections that any of us would have to protect our sense of holiness, to protect our dignity, to protect our integrity. Right? We have that all around us. We have mezuzahs, we put on tefillin, we have learning, we have davening, we have lots of things peppered throughout our day that are supposed to remind us of our connection to Hashem and supposed to protect us from nefarious influences from the external world. Yosef HaTzadik had none of those. The greatness of Yosef, he writes, is that despite the fact that Yosef is a Mitzrayim, and he had no, so to speak, protection around him, nonetheless, he was able to sustain himself. He was able to maintain his relationship and his connection with his heritage. Now we understand why Shiloh is connected to Yosef. Because the same way Yosef did not have that protected wall, Shiloh also didn't have that protected wall. Yerushalayim has protection. Yerushalayim has a barrier. Yerushalayim is able to say, I'm able to keep in the Kedusha because I'm able to separate myself from the world, the negative influences and forces from the world around us. Yosef HaTzadik and Shiloh comes along and says that, no, sometimes you're going to find yourself in life where you're not going to have that protection. You're going to be in situations where you're not going to have the natural baked in opportunities to protect yourself from outside external influences. And the fact that Yosef was protected and succeeded, so too, That is what Shiloh represents. He writes here on page number 6. He says, Yosef HaTzadik, Bezesh Zacha Shelo Yichali Dabek Davar Zar, Vein Sar Choma. Yosef was able to protect himself. He didn't need a wall. He didn't need a barrier. V'al Kain, end of the first paragraph. And therefore, Bechelko Shel Yosef, in the place of Yosef, Ochlin Kachim Belo Choma Bechol Haroa. You didn't need a wall in Shiloh. Why? Because it had the energy, it had the spiritual energy of Yosef HaTzadik. V'zeh Menucha Zo Shiloh. Now we understand why Shiloh in the Pasuk is referred to as Menucha. Ki Zos Kruya Menucha. That is what Menucha again, literally translates as rest, but that's what it means. She'ein Sarech L'shum Shmira. V'holech B'shuk Bein Asonim Ve'inam Yichon Lasos Lo Me'ula. Right, what does like real serenity mean? Serenity means you could just walk in peace and you don't have to worry about anyone bothering you. Right, you go on the subways in New York City right now. Right, you go to Michigan after yesterday. Right, you're thinking twice before you go on the subway, right? You're a little worried. That's not peaceful. That's not serenity because you're always looking over your shoulder. You're always nervous. You wear a yarmulke, you're not wearing a yarmulke. Is someone going to attack me, not attack me? So you're like, guards are up. Right, your protective walls are up. You can't have peace when your protective walls are up. You're always on edge. You're in fight or flight mode. But you come to the free state of Florida, and you walk down Montoya Circle. Now you have menucha. Now you have peace. You don't have to worry. Your protective walls aren't up. You can relax, right? Ein sarach l'shum shmira. You have Seth Bassoff taking care of you. You don't need any other form of shmira. You got Alan Berger sitting on his roof with his rifles taking care of all Montoya Circle. I can run at night in the dark. I got nothing to worry about. That's menucha, he writes. With all joking aside, it means the way he's describing it, it means that you have the confidence to walk what he describes as the proverbial marketplace, the marketplace of the world of ideas, sometimes ideas that are antithetical to what we believe in, but the knowledge that I am strong enough in who I am, that nothing's going to touch me and nothing's going to bother me. That's menucha. That was Shiloh. Shiloh was, Yerushalayim needed protection. Shiloh says you don't need protection. You should have confidence in who you are to be able to withstand the temptations and the onslaught from the world around you and not be worried that you're going to give in and succumb to those temptations. That's menucha. That means that I can go in the world with that confidence, with that serenity of understanding that my relationship with Hashem is strong enough that it's going to carry me through no matter what. He writes here, V'alkein nikra Shabbos menucha. That's why Shabbos is referred to as menucha. What don't we have on Shabbos? We don't have tefillin on Shabbos, right? One of the oaths, what's called a sign. It's the sign that connects us with Hashem. Why do we not need it on Shabbos? He says, because Shabbos is menucha. B'Shabbos ein sarach lekoshram u'me'atzmam hein tovim. Shabbos is when we have such a strong relationship and connection with Hashem, I don't need external things. I have menucha. I have the serenity knowing that whatever the world throws my way, I'm going to be okay. Why? Because I'm fortified. I believe in myself. I have the confidence. I built up enough of a reservoir and enough of protection that I'm able to go and I'm able to just be and to enjoy and to be serene without the protection around me. Now he says you connect everything together. Remember we started off, the Pasuk says, Ela menucha ve'ela nachala. The Gemara says menucha is Shiloh. Shiloh was in the place of Yosef. We say, what's the connection between all three of them? What does menucha have to do with Shiloh, have to do with Yosef? We said, now it makes sense. Yosef was in a place where he had no protection. He had no one watching over him. And yet, Yosef succeeded because his connection, his relationship with Hashem was strong enough. Shiloh didn't need any protective barriers. You were able to bring Kachim, the holiest of our sacrifices, to Shiloh. Shiloh didn't need any walls around it. It was able to withstand that. It was strong enough to be able to withstand that. Shabbos is the same thing. Shabbos, when we come into Shabbos, it's the knowledge and the awareness that we've worked hard all week to be able to build up ourselves, to have the confidence to go into Shabbos and say, you know what, Hashem, whatever civilization throws at me, whatever politics throw at me, whatever you throw at me, I have that menucha, I have that serenity to know that I'll be able to withstand and to survive those challenges. Now we understand the connection between menucha, Shiloh, and Yosef. It's the confidence of Yosef and the confidence of Shiloh which gives us that sense of menucha, that sense of peace, tranquility, and serenity that allows us to go through life with great success. And so we saw three ideas in 30 minutes. Idea number one was the amazing idea of Lubavitch Rebbe, Makom. Why is it left ambiguous? Because it's anywhere you are. You could be anywhere, guys, and still have that connection to Hashem. It's a very powerful idea. Idea number two, from Mordechai Kamenetsky, also an amazing idea. It's not about the length of the journey, it's about how you view it. If you don't like it, it's going to feel forever. If you find joy and happiness and fulfillment in it, it's going to feel very short. That is the ultimate judge and measure of how we approach our Judaism and how we're going to pass it on for generations to come. Idea number three is from the Naos Desha. Again, what does it mean, peace and tranquility? It's when we have that confidence, when we don't need that protection, but we understand that we are fortified enough in who we are and what we represent and what our values are, that we can take on the world. And no matter what the world throws at us, no matter what politics throw at us, no matter what Hashem throws at us, we have the menucha, the confidence and the tranquility that we're going to be able to withstand those tests and challenges. I wish everyone a good Shabbos.